Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Professional wrestling. Wow, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Chris, I am spending the last couple days in a demographic that matters. It's fascinating. In 2 days, I will no longer be of use to any advertiser anywhere. 50. Well,
oh, that's not true. There's lots of advertisement made for this demographic.
Yes,
it's just on different
Fox
channels.
News, yes. AARP, yeah, we'll get there. I don't know. It really didn't hit me until like an hour ago, to be honest. But, just another day. Like my brother's like, hey, you doing anything special? Because it's a landmark. But, oh, no, man. You know, I'm taking the day off work so I can have a 3-day weekend. That's what I'm doing. But it's you know, it's like, what do you want? I want to move out of LA because I don't want to grow old here. That's the other thing. It's like, I am in a LA is a very weird city. It has a perpetual importing of young 20 somethings, bright eyed and bushy tail, waiting to get broken. It's a very odd city where you see it every month, especially around January and February. The U-Hauls are loaded. People are keeping their U-Hauls open because they don't know anything about L.A. I'm just like, I'm done. I don't want to be 60 and living in this city anymore. So, yeah, that's weird. You're going on a trip. You're going to have fun.
Yeah, I'm going to Santa Fe tomorrow. Should be exciting. Should be a lot of fun.
I have nothing deep to say about my birthday, but other than I thought about quitting podcasting, I'm like, I'm too old to be doing that.
No, you thought about quitting podcasting because WWE appears to be in a death spiral of narrative decline that, I mean, this story is not going to end well.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Better hair, though. Great mustache.
The mustache? Oh, yeah. No, I'm watching that Raw, and I'm just like, God, this feels like a Vince show. There's absolutely no creativity to it. Preposterous explanations for the moves they are making. I'm going to talk about that Seth Rollins promo because it literally made me angry. And I should get angry watching a show that's dumb. We have a new belt, Chris.
It's great. It's the world heavyweight champion.
Oh, we will talk about this in a bit. Top story, also at Raw this weekend, or on Monday, CM Punk apparently was at the airport in Orlando, flying to Chicago, met up with some of the WWE wrestlers, decided he'd take a visit to the old stomping grounds. Spoke to some people. Rumor is that he and Miz had a conversation where they squashed beef. There were some pictures going in, but met up with Hunter, talked for a couple minutes. I asked if he could stick around. Hunter said, hey, I got to clear it with Vince McMahon. Moments later, head of security clearing out CM Punk from the building. Now, I can take this a few different ways. I could take this as, hey, yes, WWE is not going to let a guy who sued them in the building to hang around backstage, especially Vince McMahon. if I wanted to take a more optimistic view, it could be, hey, the script wasn't done at 5 p.m. local time. Very Vince move. And if you're around, once the script comes back, hey, friends and family, out of there. We need to concentrate on what the show is because we're star for time. On the other side of it, there are people going, well, CM Punk's obviously doing this for attention or something like that. I had another point of view, brought it up with my co-host on the other show that I do. And he actually brought it up first, so I'll give credit to Paul Fontaine for this one. But if you're in recovery of any sort, they do tell you to go and try and make amends with the people you wronged, et cetera, et cetera. After a public falling out, as CM Punk had, with just a spectacular blow up, and I've had one of these in the environment I was in improv. I mean, and you know, you blow up all your friendships and stuff like that. You start to get a little bit retrospective. I don't know if CM Punk's in any sort of recovery or not. I know that he does not do substance abuses, but, you know, there's some anger issues with CM Punk, I would say, that maybe he's dealing with in some way. I was thinking, you know, maybe he's just trying in his old age to make amends so he has a home when he's old and that people will actually care about him when he's old, as opposed to just burning every bridge. I don't know. But any thoughts on CM Punk appearing at Raw? There's obviously a possible tampering thing that might, you know, that you'd be scared of too if you were WWE, given that Punk is still under contract with AEW.
Absolutely, and the news that was out last week that he might be getting some sort of brand split or some be the beneficiary of that in some way, shape, or form. I also viewed this as Vince reasserting himself on Hunter.
Oh, okay.
Punk goes to talk to Hunter, and then when Hunter has to ask permission from Vince, Vince tells him no.
Yeah.
Just reminding everybody who's in charge of who here.
That's actually a very good point that I hadn't thought of, because everybody was talking about, oh, you know, Punk and Hunter don't get along. Yeah, but he might have been trying to squash that one too if he was trying to make amends with people. Not necessarily for a job, but just, you know, for his own. Maybe he's at that age where it's just like, dude, why was I fighting over this stupid crap?
Type of a thing. I could see him wanting to squash the beef. Absolutely.
I could too. Speaking of the supposed brand split, having a summit apparently, or in some way he was acting as an intermediary, CM Punk and Chris Jericho apparently met this week. I am thinking we are going full speed with this CM Punk on a second show. I believe Jericho is going to be a part of that. I believe Jericho will be the person who is kind of a go-between between the CM Punk show and the other show. He's obviously got the ear of Tony in many, many ways. I am not going to say that the Elite beef is squashed at all. I don't expect it to be necessarily. I could see him trying, but any random thoughts on just the rumor that Punk and Jericho have met, according to the Wrestling Observer?
Chris Jericho always finds a way to attach himself to something, doesn't he?
Well, I viewed him, I've said this on the show before, I view him creatively as kind of how Jim Cornette always viewed Triple H economically. Jim Cornette always said Triple H wasn't the star. He was always the guy who attached himself to the star so that his legacy would be bigger. Jericho, to me, he's not the next big thing, but he's always going to try and attach himself to the next big thing so he remains relevant. I think my joke was I could see Jericho going to Tony's office and go, you know what? I could show that Vikingo guy a thing or two.
Oh, absolutely. And who could forget the world championship reign of Action Andretti?
Yeah. But remember, Punk and Jericho had some issues when Punk went on his Instagram and called him a stooge, which is somewhat true if you're going to look at it that way. But yeah,
Jericho really
theater
is.
Politics is so crappy, dude.
You know, whether or not Punk said it or not, let's not mince words.
Oh no, he did say it. It was on his Instagram.
No. I know he said it. I'm just saying, let's not mince words here. Jericho's definitely a stooge. Like, yes. That's kind of who he is.
How dare you? What's Dave's number? In other interesting news, Mercedes Moné apparently has an extension with New Japan and Bushiroad. Some conflicts about it. It was reported this weekend that there was an extension to her deal, but Fightful Select was told by members of her team that as of now, that only covers the May New Japan show in the United States, which is in Long Beach in May. Sources they spoke to in New Japan weren't so sure how long the deal ran, but they did say they weren't matches scheduled in Japan for quote unquote at least a while. It is rumored that her contract is up next month. But yeah, she will be doing the New Japan show here in Long Beach. They announced a mini tournament with Willow Nightingale and a couple of other wrestlers. I am going to be interested because the Walter period in Long Beach has been kind of New Japan's home when they were doing, test shows for the US market. But it's been the law of diminishing returns the last few times. But if Mercedes Moné helps them get a sellout here in Los Angeles, I'm thinking both companies have to start bidding for her.
Yeah, I think both do. I think if you're AEW, you want to get this conversation going fast. Make her a really attractive offer. They could really use her right now.
They need some star power there, definitely. Per Annalise Gilbert and Mike Leonard of Bloomberg Law, a lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court for Eastern District of New York on Monday by former writer Brittany Abrahams. Abrahams, who is black, was hired by WWE as a writer for Raw and Friday Night SmackDown in 2020. Among the complaints alleged by Abrahams in the lawsuit were the use of racial and gender stereotypes in scripts, including one that instructed Raw Women's Champion Bianca Belair to say, quote, don't make me take off my earrings and beat your ass. Another call for Apollo Crews to talk with a stereotype. Typical and exaggerated Nigerian accent. She said her complaints were rebuffed. According to Gilbert and Leonard, Abrahams also alleged she was subjected to quote unquote to a number of racist pitches about co after complaining, with some ideas pitched on a Slack thread that Vince and Stephanie McMahon were included on. Some of the ideas posed in the thread by other writers per Abraham's complaint include having a black male wrestler dress in drag, and on a separate occasion, one wrestler allegedly proposed giving a Muslim wrestler a secret that would reveal that they were, quote, behind the 9/11 attacks. I'll let you go first on this one.
All right, so the black wrestler in drag has to be R-Truth, and it's probably for the 24/7 title.
I believe it was the original pitch for Reggie before he became a sommelier.
Oh, criminy. Yeah,
Or
well,
salt. I think I said that right,
no,
didn't
you said that right. No,
I?
he's a sommelier.
Okay. But yeah.
I mean, I have a hard time looking at a quality character like Commander Az Is as anything that deals in racist tropes.
I'm gonna have an unpopular take, so stop me here if I get a little bit too over my skis. And it comes in a couple of certain parts. Number one, have you watched wrestling in the last 40 years? No offense, but it deal, especially in WWE, it deals in the dumbest of these tropes. Number two is one that I'm shaky on. And let me know if I'm wrong here. I am one of those people. Look, you people know, and if you've listened to this show for any length of time, I've had cups of coffees in actual writers' rooms. There was a lawsuit back in 2003, I think it was, by a writer's assistant from Friends who alleged harassment, and also racism in that writer's room because of pitches. And because her pitches for more inclusivity were rebuffed. And a judge threw out it, but it was very interesting the way that the Hollywood community took it. And basically, Hollywood's take by the Writers Guild, by the Producers Guild, by big time showrunners and stuff like that who filed an amicus brief. Basically said that what happens in the writer's room is sacred and you can't. You don't want anybody with the ability to chill artistic expression. Now, I understand that wrestling is a very white, sometimes offensive world. I'm not totally on board with the writer's room, as Sankar's saying, but I kind of am very close to there. Because if you've worked in a creative environment, and Lord knows, compared to the former stories by WWE writers where you'd make a pitch and Vince would spend 10 minutes telling you how you've ruined the business and set it back for 20 years, it almost sounds tame in some ways to just make stupid pitches. But in brainstorming, you have to make stupid pitches to find good ones usually. Now, I'm not saying, oh, do you mean people just go in there and say, hey, let's make a clan wrestler? No, I am not. I'm not going that far. I'm saying, yes, people should control themselves and whatnot. I am also saying that writers' gigs, and this is coming from actual television type stuff, they lock you in a room for 12 hours, they feed you, and eventually you go a little stir crazy and you start talking shit about like the cast and the crew. And that's what happened with this Friends lawsuit, is that they were pitching just ridiculous things. Like the most gross one that I remember was putting twigs in a part of the female anatomy type of a thing and making that a story type thing, which of course immediately got rejected, but it's just people throwing out ideas and blowing off steam and things like that. And I kind of agree with my Hollywood brethren on it. And like this amicus brief gets a little bit ridiculous because they use examples like, well, you don't want a janitor to be able to shut down a production of the vagina monologues. That's actually an example that they used. I understand that she is upset. She's also claimed that she was fired for racial reasons. You know, if that part can be found to be true in discovery, I'm good with that. But the whole part about the pitching ideas, especially in this company, which is just, that's the other thing, is they found that the judge, at least throughout the lawsuit in California, said that because Friends deals with adult situations and sexual situations and things like that, that sexual pitches that might make a writer's assistant uncomfortable, et cetera, would be considered fair game and would not constitute harassment per se, because that's part of the deal. And I think if WWE used that same strategy about certain stereotypes, and hey, there are racial storylines in here, they could convince a judge to throw this thing out.
I don't think it's a great case.
It's not a great case to me.
No, I,
unless there's something I don't know about that's in her inner file about this, but these are just the most high profile examples. I mean, like if she has an email with like somebody, okay, I can parse this a little bit. If the racial remarks were being made towards her, yes, definitely take them for all they're worth. If it was just bad pitches that were stupid and racially insensitive, I'm not sure.
Yeah, It's very tricky. It's like,
it is
because
she's still an audience to it all.
She's still an audience to it all. And I want to be real nuanced on my thoughts. I know. All right, so you're going to just step on mine. That's how you're going to how you're going to nuance your thoughts, Jeffrey.
No, I'm not.
That's not the way we nuance our thoughts here on Shake Them Ropes. That's that we've never been like that.
No, I was just saying thought mine were nuanced, but I'm not sure if they are. So go
okay.
Ahead.
All right. So like, in terms of a hostile workplace environment, I just think like there is a different standard for an office place versus, let's say, a strip club, right? What constitutes a hostile work environment in a strip club? It's going to be a little bit more of a gray area than an office. Pro wrestling, not obviously a strip club, but like I'm kind of with you. It has always had this sort of lowest common denominator aspect to it that I think does come with the territory. Now, that being said, some of these ideas, like let's assume that all of these ideas were legitimate ideas, they are both lazy and bad ideas. And let's not mince words here. The Apollo Crews angle was
horrible.
Racist. It was racist and horrible and stupid. Like, I mean, and the way they just sort of like dropped it and pivoted it out really made the whole thing unbelievably like cheap and trite. And they, you know, we've talked often about the questionable way they have scripted R-Truth in the past.
Yes.
The heel clicking and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
No, I mean, you know, like, it's, this is the thing.
If it makes it in the script, I think she has, I mean, and.
Right, and some does, of these, yeah. And some of these did. Yes. That's where, like, Judge Nova, I think I would side with her. If I'm making a rule, it would depend on like the terms or whatever, but like, yeah. Okay. Vince is probably running a toxic work environment. Like I think that like there's, there's a pretty clear case for that. I'm just not sure that, especially like I'm not sure in a real world court, she can win on that.
Yeah. I'm also like, if there's something in there where it's like, writers are going, hey, let's tweak so and so and keep pitching these terrible things. Yeah, you have a case. You know, if somebody's like, well, we need to think of something for Mansoor right now. Oh, I don't know. Let's just say he's irresponsibly taking credit for 9/11.
He's using 9/11 to pick up chicks. That was the angle?
That's the angle.
Yeah. I mean, that's
it's terrible.
It's like,
but it's just a pitch and it was rejected. That's the other thing. It's like, it's not like it made it into the script and then they said no, we gotta cut that.
I guess
for time.
Here's my thought. It says something about the culture that the filter doesn't kick in, that script or that pitch is so shithouse that it's not even worth voicing.
Well, we don't know if that guy was yelled at for making it such a dumb pitch either. It's a
Well, so, let's just assume that the Nigerian one actually getting over emboldened him.
I'm just imagining like someone like me in the writer's room. If somebody said that, I go, no, let's not make it that obvious. Let's give it to Angel Garza.
That would actually be way funnier.
Angel Garza goes, you know what? I was the guy behind 9/11.
I was the mastermind.
Really? Yeah. Didn't know that, did you? I'm not going to go any further with that bit because then I get in a lot of trouble.
Wait, aren't you 25?
Yeah, you know, I was a baby and had a lot of anger issues.
It was online a lot back in those days.
You know. Found a bulletin board that got me
on the boards.
Internet.
Yeah, on the internet 1.0. It was a dark time.
You know, Usenet was still available. I could go there. Yeah, it's difficult because I like to think that I would defend creative freedom and not find a way to do that. But on the other hand, I'm just like, hey, don't be a jerk. Don't be racially insensitive, even though that's what the boss wants. That's the other thing. Is like, if you can prove that Vince McMahon only wanted to hear those types of pitches, type of a thing, because that was his wheelhouse, I think you might have a case.
Right. That's there's a lot of circumstantial stuff.
Yes.
In this story, there's a couple of pieces missing, but like, I'm with you. If you could find some sort of thing of like, that's a shitty idea, but here, keep them coming. You know, Vince
these were the ideas that the people at the top were telling us that they'd accept, and they weren't accepting our other ones. And the proof is that this line about that we kept on pitching to Bianca eventually made it in, or
right,
she
right.
kept rejecting it. And yeah, you can make a case here. I'm actually been moved to think it's a little bit stronger, but Discovery is going to be a. They're never going to give up anything about internal communications. And I don't know if you're going to be cynical. Is this the kind of lawsuit that it's just looking for a settlement? Because I think WWE is going to settle this.
Yeah. I don't mean this doesn't strike me as a lawsuit that, at least on the face of it, from everything I'm seeing, is trying to like do a grand expose
right.
of WWE here.
Right. Okay.
And yes, I'm not getting that vibe off of it. But yeah, no, I do think if you could get any sort of somewhat positive reinforcement off some of even the bad ideas, like, okay, that's too far. But anything like that, you see, you don't need much to start making a much stronger case here that there's like a culture of it.
I'm just amazed that they were going to that somebody pitched a story to use 9/11 to pick up chicks.
Not using 9/11 to pick up chicks.
It's a Von Wagner story.
Let me tell you who I am. My father was a Beverly brother. Also, I was the orchestrator of 9/11.
Wait, huh? That's his next big secret. Oh, dear Lord.
You guys are laughing about 9/11?
No, we're laughing about the pitch. Stop it. Jeez.
Like, where do you possibly take that?
Yes.
It's like such a bad step one.
To me, that entire pitch meeting ends. It's probably a Zoom call since it's 2020. The Slack chat goes dead silent. And somebody types, "What the F did you just say?" And that guy is staring at his computer. Knowing WWE, they probably require you to have your camera on to make sure you're really engaged with this pitch session right now. And that guy has a choice to make. He's going, "Well, I can try to explain this. Or I could pull a Jeffrey Toobin." Those are your two choices. I can either make this far worse or I can try and explain myself.
It boggles the mind what the end game could possibly be for that sort of angle.
I don't know. They pitched Heidenreich as a Nazi at one time. This company is like, it's like you almost want to sit down the poor writer, and this poor girl probably just was like, "I'm trying to get a job writing. Oh, that's a television show. Is wrestling any good? Let's watch. Oh, I remember The Rock, and I remember, you know, the Attitude Era." And then you sit her down and you go, "All right, here's Saba Simba. Here's El Matador. Here's Roddy Piper painting half his face black to do a program with Bad News Brown." Was it Bad News Brown that he did that with?
Yeah, okay. It was Bad News Brown.
You start showing her that stuff, and then she never wants to write for wrestling again, and she saves herself this trouble.
That's why I brought up
the room.
That's why I brought up the comparison earlier of like the strip club, just as like a construction, not like as a direct one-to-one comparison. Yeah. You look at TNA back when they were TNA and all the stuff they used to do with the Knockouts division. If you went there's sexism on TNA. It's almost hard to get that sentence out without immediately laughing.
Dude, like, that would be
no
interesting.
Duh.
If she wins or they sell, do you start seeing these coming out of the woodwork? Like,
oh boy.
Because it's precedent then. Yeah. I don't think she has a chance due to artistic expression. I think really a court's going to not find in her favor unless they can find something. And if it ever got to that point, WWE would settle before. And actually, you know what? That's the other reason they might settle, is that they don't get precedent.
Right. Right. They might actually be a little bit worried about
much
that.
Much like Fox Dominion. You know, that's one of the reasons they settled, was so that a precedent wasn't established.
Mm.
One of them. Tony Khan. Chris's Harpo speaks in the back of my mind. Mm. Tony Khan announcing the next Owen tournament for AEW. Matches will be on that Canadian tour, some of which at Forbidden Door 2. Especially interesting since Owen did do some time in Japan.
Yeah, Tony was once again warm and dynamic in his delivery here, and I'm excited to see what this Owen Cup has for us.
There are two trains of thought, and this is just reckless speculation. I'm hoping they don't repeat Adam Cole and Britt Baker, but I'm thinking they might due to the reality show. Now, there is Jeff Jarrett as his former tag partner. Which would drive people nuts. I don't, Chris, I was hanging out. I'm going to tell you a little bit of the story. I was hanging out in two Discord rooms during Dynamite. I was hanging out in the one for Voices of Wrestling. Not the writers, but the fans of Voices of Wrestling. And I was hanging out in another one. The other one loved that Dax FTR or Dax Jeff Jarrett match. Thought it was a lot of fun. Voices won. Why are we subjected to Jeff Jarrett and FTR bald? Oh my God. You know, just the the pearl clutching was amazing. And if they gave Jeff Jarrett the win here, I know we would probably take it as a nice gesture, but people would go ape about it.
Yeah. The win was a little bit perplexing just because you're reestablishing FTR.
Yeah.
But I liked the match. I thought it was fun for what it was.
News and notes about talent. I'll read four of them. One of them probably will go into the Lazy River a bit, but Trinity Fatu, I believe, made her debut on Impact tonight. I'm not positive that, or it might be next week. I'm not sure about that. Madcap Moss on the WWE website has been lost the Madcap name and has gone back to Riddick Moss. Sol Ruka, as we saw in NXT, is being written out for a while. She has a torn ACL. And Roddy Strong is with AEW, which was an amazing debut that nobody had that secret out by the time they were there. But we can go into Roddy during the Lazy River. Any of the other three that catch your fancy?
I mean, they've got this Riddick and Emma heel thing going. It is what it is.
I am excited for Trinity Fatu. Trinity Fatu, the former Naomi, is a pure product of WWE, I believe. I believe the training center and stuff. I know she went through a season of NXT as well, when it was a reality show. I believe season 3. But they got some good female wrestlers over there in Impact. They got Deonna Purrazzo. They got Jordynne Grace. I think there's some potential for... Because I view Trinity Fatu much like people talk about some people as system quarterbacks. I think she's very good in the WWE system of a couple of high spots, great entrance, you know, get the crowd pumped type thing. I'm interested to see her in an actual kind of wrestling company. And I think this would be a nice way to test those waters. I really am interested to see what she does here.
I am too. I'm hopeful that she can kind of figure out the outside of WWE style. I'm not going to use like indie style or whatever, like just outside of WWE style.
Yeah.
And do something so that she, if she decides to, let's say, go to AEW, doesn't end up like Saraya, where that woman's searching for a clue right now still.
Since we're already getting into Lazy River territory, that's something that always gets me about Saraya, because she's from a wrestling family, not a WWE family, a wrestling
family. I know.
And, you know, she was touted and touted and touted, and then she came into NXT and she came into WWE, and fans mostly of the United Kingdom variety were always making excuses. In the early days of my show, where I was like, okay, whatever. Oh no, once she gets an opponent, then you'll see. Then you'll see what she could do. And I watched her on the indie. She was very, very good. I've seen some of her old stuff. Even when like Becky, the future Becky Lynch was out with injury and just being her like second or third with that whole thing. But it's one of those things where I think she spent so much time in the WWE system at such a young age that I think she just kind of morphed into that system. Because, I mean, she had those matches with AJ Lee, and everybody blamed AJ for them being bad. But I've never really, I mean, other than the one match with Emma in NXT, and I'm sure there's probably one I'm forgetting, but she never really blew me away in terms of having a great match. I always thought she was a great presence. I thought she had great, you know, promo ability, but I never really, you know, you never saw anything like a Bailey Sasha out of Saraya / I can't remember her name now.
Paige.
Paige, thank you.
Yeah. I've just not been dazzled by her. I think I'm more hopeful that Trinity Fatu can figure it out in her post WWE career.
Yep. Okay, Lazy River. No sponsor today. Anything we watched, anything we saw, past or present. Do you want to start with the conversation we had
last
week?
This belt sucks.
Oh, this belt sucks. We can go with that then. Yes, we will go with that. Yes. This new title belt sucks. Tell us more about the title, Chris.
So there's a new belt. It's the World Heavyweight Championship. And if you're confused, that's forgivable because there's the WWE Heavyweight Championship. And there's also the Universal Heavyweight Championship.
So and now there's a world.
So there's a world, there's a universe, and there's a WWE. And this belt basically serves as a consolation MacGuffin for everyone involved in the 2022-2023 Great MacGuffin Chase of WrestleMania. And I think the most likely person to end up with this MacGuffin is none other than Roman Reigns when it is all said and done. I think that we have trifurcated the belt.
That's an excellent word, by the way.
Thank you. And the only way for this to end is for the belt to be reunified.
Yes. There's three ways this can go, and none of them are good. It's either Cody gets this title as his consolation prize, Brock gets this title as his consolation prize, and Cody beats him for that to then go to Roman to unify them, or Roman ends up with all three belts. That's it. That's the list. And if this is their grand idea for somehow getting out of that corner they painted themselves into when they should have had Cody beat Roman, this sucks. I'm sorry.
This sucks.
This is such a terrible... And what made me angry was the justification in storyline of Seth Rollins.
I thought you were going to say the Reigns was in a position where he no longer needs to frequently defend his title. Like, actually saying that in storyline.
Yes. That was ridiculous, too. That was ridiculous, too. But I'm going for the... We don't need part-timers and a belt that doesn't, that's not about part-timers and politics. All right, let's think about this for a second. The part-timer part was because Roman had leukemia and occasionally needs to take breaks for treatments and things of that nature. The politics part has never been a story on television. And you know why you have 3 hours of television on Monday and 2 hours of television on Friday? So you can tell the stories on television. That's why, kids. And they've never said anything about Roman politicking his way out of defending the title. Cody Rhodes won the Royal Rumble. He won the right to fight him. The other thing is, hey, you know what? Roman's beaten every guy you've put in front of him. He hasn't run away from it. He hasn't said no thank you. He has, and he's put stipulations on the matches that have been adhered to. Now, you may not like the stipulations, but if you don't like the stipulations, then have one of your authority figures then make a match with Roman where the stipulation is waived or where Brock Lesnar can get out of the stipulation. But this just screams to me, well, we need a hook somehow. As former Shake Them Ropes guest Brian O'Connell said, this looks like a giant class ring on a belt. And the storyline is so contrived and effing ridiculous that none of these guys fighting for this title look good in the absence of Roman Reigns, who has beaten everybody. Roman Reigns has now officially cleaned out the division, so to speak, and has moved on, and he has both titles, and you're just making a belt to make a belt that makes all these guys look stupid for wanting it.
Yeah. If... You know, we get around to Royal Rumble time, right? And somebody wins the Royal Rumble. They get to choose from one of the three belts now. They have like three adventures they can choose from.
Or if you include the NXT title.
Oh, that's true. You can theoretically challenge for the NXT one as well. No, they should just call this a Supercontinental title. That's all this is.
You know what they should call this? They should call this Guy We Really Don't Want to Put on Top title. That's what they should call this. In the meantime, title.
This is actually how they treated the last thing they called the World Heavyweight Championship.
Yes.
See Dolph Ziggler.
See Dolph Ziggler. Yes, there was the title belt that mattered, and then there was a world title that didn't matter. And that would go from show to show, depending on what Vince thought the hotter show was. It would usually, the hotter belt would usually always be on Raw until everybody started complaining that, hey, you're forcing this guy down our throat and he's far too powerful. And oh, by the way, you're neglecting your second show to serve the other masters, and Fox is mad. So we're going to put that guy on SmackDown, which is how Roman got on SmackDown in the first place. It's just everything about this feels like a repeat of things that didn't work before.
Yeah, no, this is, to me, waving the white flag of we don't know what to do. Nothing says we don't know what to do more than needing to come up with this new prop.
And I was told we were only in the second inning at the WrestleMania post-game conferences by one Roman Reigns. No, we're this bloodline story, we're only in the second inning.
Well, yeah, this is going to end with Roman Reigns being like the Ultimo Dragon with all the Jade Crown titles.
Man, and somehow has a baby face, because that's the whole point of this, is to then make him the biggest baby face this company's ever had, right? Or are we just is he gonna retire a heel and go to Hollywood?
That would be awesome. He never turns baby face.
He never turns baby face because he can't figure it out. I'm watching this, and I'm as a writer, I'm trying to think, okay, here's the plot points. Here's what we're going to do. I'm sure they have a thought, and I'm sure it somehow involves either Cody or Roman. It probably involves Brock with this other belt along with Roman as a two-man power trip going up against Cody, who's trying to take all the titles away from them.
Then
they do the Jericho thing where he beats both guys in a night, but he's still not the star of the division or something.
You could have a scenario where, I guess, Brock wins the World Heavyweight title, and then Roman and Brock, I guess, become tag team champions as well.
Oh, I think they're getting the tag titles. I do. I think there's going to be a three-way between Sammy and Kevin, the Usos, and this two-man power crew. And eventually, because on Friday, I think the Usos are going to lose this match that they dedicated to Roman. Now Roman's mad. So he's going to get a pick partner he can trust, which will be either, actually, it might be Solo, now that I think about it.
Yeah, right. I could see Roman wanting a belt Solo to reward him, the street champion.
But I thought Solo might be going after one of the other belts, like Gunther's or something like that. I don't know. It feels like there's a story there. It just feels like, God, we're just going to mark time until we figure out that we should make Cody the star to see what he has as a star.
Right, that we should have done Cody as him back at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to defend that WrestleMania finish now. They had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah.
They just swerved to swerve to swerve. It was the M. Night Shyamalan WrestleMania.
I see dead crowds. Let me go through Dynamite a little bit here. Because overall, I liked the show. I did. I enjoyed the show. They have kind of an opposite problem here. But same at the same time. Because their scripting of things, this show was ridiculous if you're looking at it as we need to build stories and we can only use one trope at a time. Because I think this is the problem with AEW right now, for me, is that I think it's being run by a lot of people who watched the Monday Night Wars. And the thing the Monday Night Wars did compared to regular wrestling television up to that point is it gave you all the pay-per-view quality matches in like a 2-hour show, 3-hour show if you count Nitro. And so what happened was every week you'd get a screwjob finish. And you get interference, and you'd get, you know, a beatdown. And what happened on this AEW Dynamite is you had 3 different beatdowns by 3 different groups. You had 3 different matches that had interference. you have these things that need to be used for quote unquote main event matches and in big moments, and you're using them week after week. Like you had MJF and Sammy beat up Darby and Jack, and boy, we'll go into that, I think, in a little bit. You had the Jericho Appreciation Society beat up Adam Cole and Orange Cassidy and Bandido. And then you had the Blackpool Combat Club with their beatdown. When you really just needed one beatdown and for it to be an important beatdown. And you had it now on all three levels of your heels. You had the low card heel, the middle card heel, and the top card heel. You did the same thing with interference. You had the Sanjay Dutt thing, and you had MJF. So you had two levels of heels doing that, and it makes none of these important, where you should be spacing these things out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was a little less enamored with this show than you were. Quote-unquote main event angle. I'm sorry, Kenny Omega and Takeshita versus Butcher and Blade, that's an end of first hour angle. Like, that's just not a main event level match.
Oh, and that's another one with interference with Butcher and Blade's second...
The Bunny?
Well, no, not the Bunny. Kip Sabian.
Oh, Kip Sabian.
Doing springboard backflips onto Kenny Omega. It's like, nobody thinks the Butcher and Blade are winning this necessarily, and if you were going to do that, you'd make him toughen up, but no, I get your point. Continue.
Yeah, so I thought that was a bad main event angle, but like, I guess you're doing that because you don't really have faith in Jade Cargill versus Taya Valkyrie, because why would you? How long does this Jade Cargill aspirational title reign need to go on before we realize that there's nothing to aspire to? She is what she is. I was baffled by this end spot too, with Taya lifting up Aubrey Edwards for the jaded, or was it her finishing move, or was it her finishing move, or was it Cargill's? I don't remember.
They're the same.
Oh, that's right. They're the same. Yeah, that's the whole point. I'm an idiot.
Let's wait for that one. No, I can forgive that because I think that's a double turn. I think this is going to lead to Taya joining the Outcasts. And I think it's probably going to lead to Jade becoming a heater in that fight for the originals. I think this is where we get the Jade. Now we get the Jade undefeated babyface run, which will probably go 50 more things until they figure out what heel can take it off of her. They don't sign Mercedes. So
the babyface run's going to be a disaster because she can't sell.
No. But you know what? I liked that match once it got going. I think it started rough, but it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. I'm not going to give it 5 stars or anything. It wasn't Bandito Orange Cassidy or even I liked the Dax Jeff one. That thing was so Southern and graveyard.
You know, not for nothing. Like looking at this card again, it's like Bandito and Orange Cassidy really should have been the main event.
Yeah, but they like the hot opener and they like getting the crowd going with Orange Cassidy. That's
well, and yes, and the Elite like to be in the main event angle, whether or not they're doing something that merits being in the main event angle or not.
See, that's weird because it's the most compelling story. I get it, but MJF should be the main event. The world title should be your main event as opposed to the close of hour one. You know, the Sammy Darby match really should have closed the show if that's the push for the main event at Double or Nothing. And your world title should be the most important. The problem is, I don't want to swerve into my next Lazy River point, so I'm just going to stop there. I'll let you, if you're going to take it, you can take it, but it's your turn. I'm sorry.
I mean, I guess on the MJF thing, he is moving into this Roman Reigns sort of schedule of how often he's actually going to wrestle. But
he said that on TV, though. I mean, at least
I know, I know, I know. It is part of the story. I'm not denying that. It's just making for a very slow world title picture, even with this match building up.
I am more angry at that promo with Jungle Boy and Darby.
Hmm.
Because I thought they were fixing things. I thought, okay, great. They got all the feedback that talking segment last week was absolute garbage and undercut both guys, with Chris doing some very good mockery of you're just a terrible skateboarder. All that. Okay. It's like, okay, cool. They learned that. And then Darby goes back in with a, yeah, but I'd beat you if we were fighting. Just no. Why is Darby such a prick here? And why is Jungle Boy such a prick here? Why are these two guys that we're supposed to like? Why can't they just be about the competition and getting the title and just have begrudging respect? They don't have to like each
and,
other.
And realize that they are in a situation with MJF and Sammy who have struck a deal that they need to rise above petty differences over.
Well, see, that's the thing. And they're going to do this. And this is total. When we complain about them stealing from sports entertainment, you're getting that moment in that tag match that they set up for next week where, oh, can they coexist? Does Darby, oh, he accidentally hit him. Is it going to turn? As opposed to being just two guys who want the world title who are going to be pros? Because that would be the way I would do it. If they're going to do that, I would put away the distrust thing and just have these two guys focused and win the match.
Right.
And
it's
we move on
the
to the
exact...
four-way.
Right, you need to increase the threat to MJF the heel, and this is the mistake they sort of keep making with MJF storylines, is that they never put him in meaningful peril.
They put him in comedy peril.
Right, I mean, this four-man match right now is a comedy of errors sort of thing. Like, you know, can MJF really trust Sammy? Is Sammy going to screw over MJF
go ahead, sorry.
Right. Thank you. And we've talked about nuance on this show, Jeff.
Yeah.
So that's okay. Like, and then on the other side, are the baby faces going to get it together? It's this comedy of errors thing. Whereas it should all be three guys unrelentingly focused on killing MJF,
mm-hmm.
and like laser focused on that. Like the last several weeks should have been MJF trying to tempt each one of these guys, in each one of them, like basically being like, I don't like Darby. I don't like Sammy. I want to beat you. And I can deal with these guys after when I'm champion.
Yes. It should all be about the relationship with MJF.
Everybody's laser focused on that. Like, yeah. MJF basically going into this pay-per-view should be sweating bullets because he has not, these three guys don't like each other, but they've all agreed to put aside all of that before this match, like to basically just stay laser focused on keeping the pressure on MJF.
Because I think they're going to go the coward route again next week. I think what's going to happen is MJF's going to attack Sammy for the DQ or something like that to try and get out of it. So we're going to do, we have 3 weeks. We don't need the fatal four way right away. We could have had the beatdown by Blackpool Combat Club this week, and then next week had done Darby and Jungle Boy, or not Darby and Jungle Boy, but Darby and Sammy. And, you know, you kind of go back and forth, and that way you're not putting every story and the next beat there. And so you don't get beatdown, promo beatdown type of thing, which happened Wednesday. I just don't know. I really like MJF. I like the thought of having a heel champion. But man, this story is killing everybody involved, except maybe Sammy. I really like Sammy a lot. I thought that match was great. I liked the move that they separated him from Jericho here so he could be his own guy. Because it's actually, he's the only guy coming out stronger out of this whole thing. Because MJF was already uber powerful. You didn't need him. But I'm flabbergasted at what they're doing with Jungle Boy and Darby in this feud.
It felt like they had Darby Allin in a good place a few weeks ago,
yeah.
And that place feels very, very far away now.
Your turn, sir.
Man, let's I guess kick it over to Spring Break-In.
Okay.
It's a show that happened.
Okay, good.
So, like, no, here's the thing. Tony D'Angelo and Channing Stacks Lorenzo killed people on Tuesday night.
Yes.
They killed them.
Yeah.
Like Luca Broxy, like, he's dead.
He sleeps with the fishes, yeah.
He sleeps with the fishes. That's bad.
They killed off pretty deadly, who I assume will be in the draft somehow. But if you want people to then follow the career, you know what would be funny? If they rebrand Pretty Deadly. I could see Vince going, I don't want this gimmick.
They could be the Seaweed Boys.
There'll be no continuity.
No, after getting dropped in the bay, they touched a radioactive spider, and they turned into the Seaweed Boys. Guided by an ancient magician.
You don't pull the magician crap. I had enough of that this week on the Discord. I don't need magician stuff. Merman, though, who caused 9/11. The two mermen. I can see Vince doing that as continuity.
I didn't tell you about the magician's backstory. He said,
I don't want these two guys as Pretty Deadly. I want them as something else. What do you want them as? Make them bikers.
Make them bikers?
Yeah, sure.
Like,
they were playing foppish before. Now they'll be manly. See if you can play that.
Like the William Regal, he's a real man's man sort of gimmick.
You know, like the Mod Squad from the Jeffers twins from the 80s. I don't know. But you know, Vince, he's just going to look at, he never wants to use things that were built up in NXT. He always wants to come in and put his own panache on it. Pizzazz is what I was saying. I said panache instead. We'll go.
No, I remember the Viking experience.
Yes. We don't want them to be War Machine. That'd be the Viking experience. You know, we've built up Bailey this whole time to be a superstar. Let's bring her up and have her be afraid of kendo sticks. It's amazing that they do all this work on developmental. And the guy in charge now, because of the way things have gone down, is the one guy who doesn't pay any attention to that developmental territory. And then he gets these toys and he's like, I got to change them. Don't want them to be part of the past. Let's draft Roxanne Perez and make her a heel. That'll be a good idea. I'm flabbergasted. But yes, they killed people on NXT. Yeah. They're dead. Oh, they'll come back as zombies.
Oh, Pretty Zombie.
Pretty Zombies.
I like that. That's fun. A lot of people like Walking Dead these days.
Yeah. Hey, remember that Miz angle we did with zombies?
That was a good angle. People
liked
that.
Let's call that back.
The zombie referee could come back into the play.
Yes. Could be their manager.
That would be fun. Or the referee.
And you know what? Vince being political.
No,
it's a DEI initiative.
So you have the zombie, and like the zombie, like, referee doesn't call the matches down the middle, kind of like bad referee Nick Patrick, only is a zombie.
You know how they used
controlled by a necromancer.
What was his Antifa group again? Retribution.
It was Retribution. Yes.
Retribution. The zombie's gonna use it some sort of human resources commentary. These zombies here, they don't feel that they get enough representation on TV. Also, they
and these zombies, and they're here to take over.
They're here to take over and cause chaos and all that.
They cause chaos and eat
brains. But they've gone through the human resources department and feel that there's not enough zombie representation on TV. He'll get angry at this lawsuit and he'll just start making terrible racial allusions and stuff.
I was baffled that Kiana James and Brooks Jensen didn't win the match.
Were you?
Yeah, because I just kind of thought, like, let's commit to the heel turn of Brooks Jensen.
Yeah, that was like a 3-week storyline that just, or like a, actually like almost like a 3-month storyline that wrapped up in a week.
Yeah. I mean, I think they did a good job with Kiana James as a cheater across the board. Like, she, like, cheated in her matches and, like, cheated in her relationships.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, like, I mean, that was, you know, that part was actually done fairly well. But, like, Brooks Jensen should be a heel coming out of this.
Yes, I mean, this is an 80s movie. This is what? Can't Buy Me Love. Type of thing. He becomes a jerk. He has to go through being a jerk for a while until he has, like, until he realizes what he's done to his friends.
And he should have some success as a jerk first.
Yes, exactly. He should have success as a jerk before fame. But no, instead, back to being a virgin.
Yeah.
Loser with a better wardrobe.
I guess, but he'll probably switch out of that again, too.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I don't know. Pointless.
You know what? He's going to get pity sex now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, from like he'll actually fall in love with Fallon Henley.
And that'll be the breakup of the team.
Because Josh Briggs will be actually in love.
Because Josh Briggs is secretly in love with Fallon. Oh, this is taking a turn for the suck. Because we're booking it.
It's gonna happen. I'm willing it to power. And then Indy Hartwell. Speaking of willing to power, like. Good honor for finishing this match, but it wasn't a great match.
No. And there were spots by all three of them that were just, you look at this and go, just have him wrestle instead of doing the choreography, please. At some point, I want Tiffany Stratton to just turn around, and just throw a punch at somebody just to see what would happen. Yeah. I mean, the Andre Chase match went down like we thought it would. The Grayson Waller match had to go home early because of an injury to Grayson Waller on that rolling stunner of his, which is a shame because I like both those guys, and I might have brought up Carmelo for the draft and made Grayson champ. If Grayson gets drafted here, great. He's a better Austin Theory, as we've been saying, but yeah. I have no real other comments on
this. I don't either. It's Carmelo Hayes' title reign is not off to a great start yet. But
do we have anything on AEW to circle back on?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, then I have a suggestion here. Because I actually, at the end of our show last week after we were talking, after we stopped recording, we talked a little bit about Public Enemy.
Public Enemy.
And I went and I was rewatching some mid-90s ECW when they were really getting pushed by Paul Heyman. And we both kind of made the point that because of Heyman's pushing of Public Enemy, that I think people got the wrong idea of them as a tag team in both WWE and WCW. Do you remember this conversation?
Yes, no, I do. I'm pulling up a Public Enemy video right now, and I'm watching as we're talking.
Oh, okay. But I think they thought they were supposed to be like world-beating killer tag team. And I watched their debut on Nitro, and God bless Marcus Bagwell for. Do you remember their Nitro debut at all?
No. Who did they debut against?
They debuted against the American Males.
Okay.
And they went to do that table. They went to do the double table spot that they used to do in ECW. And remember those tables? The tables that they use are the kind that you find in some like old hotels and old buildings, really thick kind, as opposed to the kind of the thin ones that you had in ECW type of a thing. Now they were pre-sawed and stuff, but that still wasn't a fun bump to take from them.
Speaking of not fun bumps to take, I am watching Public Enemy get killed by the Acolytes right now.
Oh, God. You know, they took liberties with those two.
Dude, Bradshaw just, like, smashes Johnny Grunge here with his chair, like, four or five times until it bends. And then slams him into the stairs, like, face into the corner of the stairs. Now he's, like, clotheslining Rocco Rock, like, just, and again... Right up at the neck. Like, these guys just like got murdered, dude.
What people don't understand, I think, is in ECW at least, before they became big baby faces, they were there for the cheap heat. They were these old white guys who were pretending to be street thugs and talking in rap lyrics and coming out to rap. And it was supposed to be that kind of gimmick where you're not supposed to be doing that. You're making fun of culture, et cetera, et cetera. And then because of the, they were doing the heel trickster type thing. So they were also kind of a comedy act. And then because of their hardcore spots and things like doing moonsaults through tables when nobody was on them, they became beloved by that audience in a ironic sort of way. And became, you know, oh man, you got to see this Public Enemy act type of thing. And became very popular across the internet. And they got, and the buzz was enough for WCW, who was signing everybody at the time, to bring them in. And then when they got cut by them, because it was like, they didn't get the gimmick. They thought they were supposed to be a good tag team or a monster tag team. And they were just, you know, they're guys who hit people with stuff for the most part. I mean, they were okay. I mean, they weren't bad wrestlers. They just weren't work rate guys.
No. I mean, like, the selling's, you know, there.
That's the other thing. Is the selling is what got them everywhere. It's like, you know, you watch the Powers, or not the Powers of Pain, but the
Faces of Fear.
Faces of Fear destroy them for a while. You know, that was their job, kind of. I think everybody was expecting them to be, like, title contenders when they were brought in. But then WWE brings them in. And goes, WWE's locker room are full of jerks at that point who doesn't want anything to do with anybody from WCW. And so you have the Dudleys, yeah, well, not the Dudleys taking liberties, but definitely the Acolytes.
God, I mean, this Acolytes match is disgusting. And JBL just really, like...
Of course JBL.
Of course it's JBL.
Of course. Because Simmons at least knew Public Enemy from ECW.
Right. There are a few times where, like, Simmons is hitting, you know, Rocco Rock with, like, just the table. And, no, JBL's getting in extra shots on the way out here.
Because JBL was a jerk this whole time. I mean...
Dude, he's such a piece of crap. Like, I mean, it's cruel to do this to a job guy. When you know that this guy can't fight back, you know that rock, you know that grunge and rock, like, cannot fight back in this scenario.
Oh, okay. I just had something from SmackDown from last week pop in my head. So I'm gonna end with that. You want to talk about bad scripting, Chris? I know you probably did. You watch SmackDown at all?
No.
Okay. They had a women's tag match on there. Where it was not Carmella, Green, or the Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville against Raquel and Liv. And there was a spot last week, I guess, where they poured water on Liv Morgan and she got angry. Chris, this is really their first title defense. They cheated to win. And they're supposed to be the baby faces. They did a spot where Liv had the pin and Raquel put a leg on her for leverage. And they got the pin against Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville, who aren't title contenders.
No.
Really?
No.
And this is how they're scripting their baby faces. And I'm like, there are times where baby faces can do a heel move and get a nice pop, and it's a release for the audience who are tired of watching them getting screwed after and screwed and screwed and screwed, or being dummies or whatever. That time is not your first title defense as babyface tag champs. I was absolutely gobsmacked by this. Are you taking it in? Is that...
I'm also watching Public Enemy against the Gangstas right now.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, no, Johnny Grunge's got the crowd going. Public Enemy, better than I think people wanted to give him credit for.
Just brawlers, yeah.
Liv and Raquel, it's weird to think that, like, right now. I was going to say Shawn Michaels is women's division's the best booked women's division. I don't even know if that's true. Yeah, I know.
If you want to watch something fun, by the way, and you've never seen it, watch New Jack's promos in Smoky Mountain. Where he is angry at all these Southern white people he has to be in front of to wrestle. And then you realize that right at the right time, Jim Cornette said, "Hey, Paul Heyman, I know we don't like each other, but these guys have way too much nuclear heat here where we're afraid for their safety. Can you do something with the gangsters?" And Paul Heyman came and said, "Yes, yes, I can." And I think the gangsters found their niche in ECW. I know Mustafa would have much rather, I think, done other wrestling than that. That's why they had such issues there. But yeah, that whole gangsters, eliminators, public enemy, and I think the Harris brothers are thrown in there towards the end or in the beginning. Fun time for some brawling tag team action.
Yeah. We got anything else here?
No, we don't. We can get out of here.
No, that's all I got, man.
You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am on the Fight Game Media Network on their Patreon, patreon.com/fightgamemedia, every Wednesday, about 15 minutes after Dynamite, myself and Paul Fontaine tape, record, whatever you want to call it, the Dynamite Show, which is a thorough deconstruction of Dynamite and all things AEW over the week. $5 a month will get you that. Chris has other side projects as well. He will tell you about them now.
Yeah, I'm still teaching guitar lessons. Getting pretty full up right now, actually. But hit me up on Instagram at instagram.com/DrDOCTOR_NOV, Dr. Nove, to get scheduled for lessons. My band, Hondo Coyote, we are a nominated band now, Jeffrey. I didn't even talk about this. This is such a big deal. I've been just like choked up. Like it's hard to believe, really.
Depends what you're nominated for.
Let me tell you, we're being nominated in both the country and Western category. It is the New Mexico Entertainment Awards, first round nominee. So it's Hoax and the Huckleberries, Silver String Band, Kyle Martin, Time Wreckers, Squash Blossom Boys, and Hondo Coyote. This is a big deal. I think if we make it out of the first round here, it's pretty much a lock.
And is there any place that people can vote on this?
Not that I'm aware of. I was actually I was speaking to Dio earlier about
Ronnie James Dio?
No, the front man Dio of the band Hondo Coyote. And I asked him, what is the scoring system? Like, how does this work? Are they coming to see us? And Dio said that there's a woman who runs it and she's in her mid-40s and she has a secret panel. And so I was like, you're telling me that this is like a secret society sort of thing. And apparently it is. So there's nothing anyone can do. Your attempts to protest the New Mexico Entertainment Awards will fall on deaf ears. But think about Hondo Coyote and what it would mean to you if we made it out of the first round.
Hello there, my name's Neil David, and I'm the host of Euro Graps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling and it happens in Europe and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EuroGrapsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.